Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I think there's less real high-end talent or fewer players that I think are capable of really carrying a fantasy team someday than we've seen in years past. You know, the first tier we had is just Moncada, Benintendi, Swanson, and Robles. So, in years past, that's been a more impressive collection of talent. But once you get into the middle of this list, I think it's deeper than it was last year. So sort of light on star power, but deeper on meaningful contributors. Episode 82 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Brett, on a scale from 1 to arguing about where Alex Reyes should rank for 3 weeks over G-Chat, how excited are you to be done with the 101?
I am very excited to be done with the 101. It was a fun process, though. We had fun doing it.
It went a lot better than I thought it was going to go. I will definitely say that.
It's always good when things go better than you thought, and you're just ecstatic to be done with them. Like, you still hated it, mostly. It's always nice.
I definitely didn't hate this anywhere near as much as the top 10 player comments. So good. I have picked quite a hobby to do willingly for myself.
Yeah, the 101 is definitely way more fun than the top 10 comments.
So as you have probably gleaned from that introduction, if you are listening, the top 101 Dynasty prospects list is out right now at BP. And Brett and I treated it a little bit differently this year. For the past few years, we have published separate lists. You know, Brett's was the official BP list, and I was sort of allowed to give my take on it. But given how closely the three of us work together, oftentimes my list and Brett's list were pretty similar anyway. So this year, we combined forces and sort of each made a list, compiled them, and then discussed rankings from there. And that's the product that you see on the site right now. So for the first segment, we're going to basically just hand it off to Craig and have him ask us some questions about the top 101 we'll discuss. And then later in the episode, we will get to top Dynasty shortstops.
Yeah, so everyone loves when I talk more. It's going to be a treat for everybody. So I guess, Ben, when we start at the top here, obviously you guys have cut these into tiers. Did you, just on a broader like outlook, did you notice anything in regards to the tiers that maybe are different than years past, or just kind of a trend within the tiers that you picked up?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's less real high-end talent or fewer players that I think are capable of really carrying a fantasy team someday than we've seen in years past. You know, the first tier we had is just Moncada, Benintendi, Swanson, and Robles. So in years past, that's been a more impressive collection of talent. But once you get into the middle of this list, I think it's deeper than it was last year. So sort of light on star power, but deeper on meaningful contributors.
Okay. And so we talked about, you mentioned that top four in a tier by itself. Was there much of a debate, Brett, over the top spot?
No, not on the top spot. I mean, we both had Moncada as the top guy going in before we even started debating the pieces of our list that were different. So that was one of the more than I would have thought easy decisions to make in the process.
Okay. Yeah. And did you find, I guess, building off of just difficult decisions, did you find that cutting a tier between four and five, Ahmed Rosario's five, Victor Robles' four, was that tougher? Or were there specific instances where having a tier break was harder than you might have expected? Or did guys kind of fall into place pretty easily?
No, I think they fell into place pretty easily. You know, we both, you know, I could see other people putting together a list like this and not being as high on Robles, and that sort of being the question as to whether really anyone gets included with the top three guys. But you know, they did. So you know, I felt pretty comfortable with that.
Sure. And so I want to talk a little bit about Ahmed Rosario, who's at the top of the second tier. He went from an honorable mention last year to a top five spot this year. I mean, Ben, what is it? We're going to get into shortstops a little bit later, but for now, what is it that kind of drove that? Obviously, he had a precipitous rise up our real 101 as well. But what is it that you're seeing in Rosario that makes him the top shortstop prospect that we have here?
Yeah, well, Swanson is still top.
Oh, but, right. I'm sorry. Whew, I forget that he's not in the
in the majors. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I do that. Exactly. I do that with he and Benintendi. They like barely count. Yeah. So Rosario marks the first time in history that I've been higher on a Mets prospect than Brett was, because I was the one who pushed him all the way up to five. I think Brett had him at a lowly seven or something like that. Basically, I am very impressed with what Rosario did, you know, with on an age for his level basis last season. And when you couple that with a lot of reports that suggest that like he's a plus, maybe plus runner now, that was not necessarily something that we knew was going to be such a part of his game a year ago. So he was always a toolsier guy that I liked. I traded for him in TDGX last season and sort of was able to get in low on him. But now that he's really close to the majors, he sort of, you know, has this secondary fantasy carrying tool in his speed. I do think the power will come around to the point where he can challenge for double-digit homers a year. So it's definitely close between him and other players in this tier, but the overall package was good enough for me that I felt pretty good putting him here.
Yeah, that makes sense. And sticking with shortstops, Brett, J.P. Crawford's down at nine. We're still in the second tier, but he's someone I've had trouble with in the past because I really like him as a prospect, but there's nothing that really, really stands out. I mean, if we look at the overview, we have impact potential in runs, which is context specific a little bit. So that's tough to rely on. What is it that drives his high ranking for such a kind of a, like, it's obviously very good. The whole package is good, but it's hard to grab onto something, you know?
It is a little hard to grab onto something. I think you could squint and you could see impact potential and batting average. I think you could squint and do the same in stolen bases. I mean, obviously we didn't mark it that way just because I think he comes up a little bit shy in both. But because of the overall skill set and because that he's, you know, he's not going to be a zero in any category, and I think he's a really safe bet to stick at shortstop. You know, he's also got the friendly, you know, the friendly park right in front of him. I think that, you know, I think it's really the sum of his parts argument versus, you know, someone like, you know, we're talking about the guys around him, someone like Rafael Devers, who, you know, has some bigger tools, but, you know, and a little bit bigger risk. But in the end, I don't see them being all that different once the risk and position gets factored in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just something with a guy like Crawford that's another angle of it that's tough for me is that, okay, so he's a sure thing to stick at short, which is helpful. But at this point, I think for our listeners and our readers, like, how much value is there in just being a shortstop? relative to your production. Like
compared to other infield slots, I mean it's not as much as it used to be. You know, we all it's easy to get caught up in the flashy names at the top of the position. The depth at shortstop still is not great. So that's where sort of some of that additional value comes in, not when you compare him with the Manny Machados and Carlos Correas of the world. But you know, there is still some value to be gleaned from there, mostly because, you know, when you have a guy who's already a third baseman or a second baseman, you know, one more move down the defensive spectrum, and then they become either an outfielder or a first baseman. And, you always have to factor in some sort of move on the defensive spectrum with a lot of these guys. But, you know, Crawford sort of sticks a little bit of extra value there because you don't have to do that.
And it's boring to value floor, but he has a very high floor as like an eminently usable fantasy middle infielder. And we did, it's funny, we did, I feel like every time Brett and I hopped on the phone or on GJazz to talk about the list, we like kept dropping Crawford like one spot. I think he started higher than this and we just kept being like, yeah, but it's kind of boring. It's kind of boring. So if we had waited another two lists, you know, 2 weeks, he probably would have been at like 12 or something.
Okay. So Ben, sticking with you, I'm looking at tier 3, 13, 14, and 15. We have Tapia, Barreto, and Williams. Those are kind of like three hit tool driven guys.
This is the my fault part of the list.
Yeah, right. Well, so I'm gonna classic reporter you and just say, talk about these three players here.
Well, Craig, what I really like about these players is they just go out there and hit. And as long as they keep putting in the work and watching some veteran players ahead of them and just keep going out there, you know, I think good things will happen. Tapia, you know, we've talked about a lot on this pod, so I'll just be brief. But he's at the point where I don't think the risk is especially high with him either.
He's already got major league time. Yeah,
exactly. And I have always believed in the hit tool. So you put that profile in Coors, and it's looking pretty attractive. Barreto, I'm definitely going out a little bit on a limb for, but I think even if he's not a shortstop, I think the glove's good enough that he'll be a second baseman. And I think the power speed combo will be useful because I do think he's a guy that is going to be able to challenge for double digit home runs, will steal 20 plus bases a year, and can flirt with a 300 average in his best years. So maybe not a top five finisher at the position, but I do think he could have some at least top 10 years. And then Nick Williams, I'm just crazy about, and I'm going to be the last one on that bandwagon. And Brett was good enough to not fight me on that one.
No, I mean, I'm still with you on there. I think there's obviously cause for concern, but I still believe in that hit tool. So I'm with you on that. So if we jump down to 18, we have start of tier 4, which is well worth the gamble. You've labeled it. Jorge Mateo is, I think, the first guy that I see here that's really about one thing and one thing only. I mean, we talk about hit tool guys, but that kind of has a cascading effect. Jorge Mateo is about stolen bases. So what do you do with Brett? Like, how did you guys figure out what to do with guys who really offer huge impact or huge potential impact in one category versus these other guys who kind of spread it out?
Well, you really have to look at what players who do put up the kind of stat lines that Mateo could put up at the major league level, and what they earn in fantasy leagues, and really compare it that way. Because otherwise it's difficult to compare. I mean, you can see Mateo is a three category guy with impact in one category, but there's so much impact in that one category that, you know, that pushes him to be, you know, someone who could earn high 20s in dollar value. I mean, you look at what D. Gordon's been able to do the last couple of years. Mateo has that kind of speed. He might have a little bit more pop than Gordon. He also might not quite have the batting average that Gordon has had of late. But yeah, it's really just kind of coming up with a best statistical output, trying to put current day dollars on it, and then comparing it down from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just as a real quick follow on, I mean, I think I certainly understand the concept of it, but I think people are going to be surprised to see Mateo above fellow Yankee prospect Gleyber Torres. Can you just talk about kind of the difference between those two guys and why the Mateo, obviously we got why Mateo was valuable, but maybe why Torres isn't as valuable in fantasy as people might think on name value alone?
Sure. You know, Torres is a very good hitter. I mean, we gave him impact potential in batting average. There's not as much ceiling with Torres as there is with Mateo. And, you know, while Mateo may have one or two more sort of general red flags, as I like to say, you know, speed is really the true equalizer. You know, you don't need to, you can do a lot of things poorly at the major league level and still contribute to fantasy teams if you run. You know, we've seen that with all the discussion around Billy Hamilton. I mean, Billy Hamilton's been really not a very good hitter since he's been in the major leagues, but he's been a really good fantasy player because he runs a ton. And, you know, Mateo might not be sort of that high end of a stolen base guy, but you know, Torres is just, I see Torres as more of your steady performer guy who can hit 300 with some contributions sprinkled around elsewhere, but probably isn't going to hit a ton of home runs, isn't going to steal a ton of bases, and probably offers a little bit more real life value than fantasy value.
Yep. That makes sense. Ben, we got two guys at 23 and 24. I mean, you mentioned Alex Reyes, but Tyler Glasnow is an intriguing guy who's kind of ridden a little bit of a roller coaster in the last year or so. He kind of had a huge amount of helium the last couple years. He made his major league debut, so he's right at the precipice of contributing, and he's got the stuff to make a huge impact. But how do you factor in? So when we list the fantasy overview here, we say what they're a contributor in and what they have impact potential in. But this is also a guy who has the chance to impact you negatively in WHIP. And how do you factor in something like that?
Yeah, that is a good question. And I think with a guy like Glasnow, you know, the timetable makes a huge difference because I don't know. Basically, you don't have to wait to have this potentially negative outcome. Like, you'll be able to see it and sort of evaluate right now. And I think it's also balancing floor versus ceiling. Like, yeah, if it really clicks for Glasnow, I mean, he could be a top 25, top 30 starter. If it doesn't really click for Glasnow, but he's at least his, like, I don't know, like 60th percentile outcome, you're probably still going to be able to use him in deeper leagues. And yes, you're right, the WHIP will be a little bit of an issue, but I do think he'll strike enough people out that if you're smart about how you construct your staff and a little selective about when you use him, you know, it's still a fantasy asset. It's not someone who you're not going to play at all. So even though it becomes not super sexy at that point, you know, the reason we were able to sneak Glasnow in the top 25 is that I do believe there will be a base level of sort of usability, even if it doesn't go our way.
Yeah, that's a good point in general, that a lot of these guys in fantasy, when they have a noticeable flaw, if you have either daily or weekly lineup changes, you can avoid the negatives and really capitalize on their good parts. For Brett, for Alex Reyes, obviously you got, and Ben, obviously chime in if you have a further commentary on this, but he's an interesting guy because last year we ranked him at 11. And I know this is a little bit different from last year in that both of you contributed to this, but he was, you know, we didn't think he'd be contributing at least significantly at the major league level last year, right? So we're kind of back at where we were at the entering last season with him, in that we have a year or so till impact, and yet he's 13 spots down. Is that just factoring risk with recovery from the arm injury, or is there something else going on there?
No, it's the risk with the injury. I mean, if he was a year out with his potential and had not had surgery, was just kind of looking at, you know, most of the season in double or triple A, my guess is he probably would have been at least 10 spots higher on this list. Probably would have been, I'd say somewhere around where that Tapia and Barreto grouping is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the risk is definitely there. You know, Tommy John is not, you know, we're finding out that it's not with guys that throw really, really hard, it's not as safe of a recovery as, you know, people have, you know, people sometimes infer. So, you know, it's not like he's that far separated from the guys above him. I mean, he's in a similar enough bucket, but the risk is just kind of too great to keep him in the top 20 at this point for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. So Ben, I'm going to jump down a little bit since I've been pretty slow going through this point. Ozzie Albies is at 36, and he's an interesting guy to me because he got upper minors time last year. We have him as an impact potential guy, an average and stolen base, which we just discovered. We just discussed kind of the importance of stolen bases. So what is it that kind of pushes him down? He's someone, based on kind of what we've talked about, that I could see having a little more helium. But he is down at 36, which is certainly not disrespectful, but it's a little lower than I think he could be, depending on the thing. So what are the risks that are involved with him that kind of landed him here?
So for me, I think the it's not really a risk, but I don't think he's going to be – I think he's going to reach the majors before he's ready to be like a real big fantasy contributor. Mm-hmm. You know, he seems like a guy who might be in the majors later this year, but – could very easily and justifiably struggle for the first season and a half because he's like 9 years old. And then part of the risk is that, yes, it's impact potential and average or stolen bases, but like his stolen base impact potential is nothing like Mateo's. Yes. It's closer to the very lower end of what we consider impact potential to be. So like you said, not at all an insult to have him here, but I think that you know, his MLB ETA is not a great representation for one is like real fantasy ETA will be.
Right, right. All right, Brett, you know, just Dan Vogelbach.
Yes, Craig.
Go, just, you know, talk about it.
All right. So Vogelbach.
You know I don't like it. So you know what I'm saying.
I know you don't like it. I'm comfortable with that.
No, I know.
He is... He has the inside track to be the starting DH for the Mariners this year, or first baseman against right-handed pitching. And I, you know, even though they do have Danny Valencia, I don't think Vogelbach is resigned to a life of being platooned. You know, he's a very advanced hitter. He can hit for average, he can hit for power. He probably won't be game changing in either of those categories, so he's not, while I don't think he's going to be a 330 guy, he could be a 280 and 25 guy. So while that doesn't quite get him impact potential on the list, it gives it's good enough to get him to be in the middle of that lineup and knocking in runs. And as we've talked about in previous podcasts, you know, Seattle is really not a bad place for left-handed power. So I see him kind of taking off with the playing time and being a meaningful contributor this year and building off of that in future years.
Fair enough. Ben, I'm going to put you in an awkward spot. Can you explain to me what Brett thinks about Ian Happ?
I think that Brett... I think Brett thinks Happ can hit 280 or better and will be second base eligible for longer than I think he will be, probably. I don't doubt that he'll be able to sprinkle in a little bit of power and speed. So I think Brett just sees the best case scenario, which I would argue is still not like super special for a second baseman. But if I believed in the bat to the same degree that Brett does, I can get it. I understand.
All right. Yeah. And I think you said in the comments that was probably the most contentious ranking.
Yeah, but Brett and I know each other, and I was just like, I don't agree. And he was like, yeah, but you have to give me this one. And I was like, fair enough. And he didn't fight me. He didn't fight me on Nick Williams. And, you know, we know each other.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. So
I'm just gonna throw this out there. I don't think Happ is a guarantee to stick at second. He may end up in the outfield. But the 11th best fantasy second baseman last year was Starlin Castro. And he hit 270 with 17 home runs and 4 stolen bases. That is, I think, a reasonable floor from a performance standpoint for Hap. You know, I do think he has a little bit more speed than that, and I think he has more batting average ability than that. But you know, the risk clearly is that he sticks at second base, which is no guarantee. But I do believe in the bat. I do. So I'll at least try and say that.
And it's not like I didn't have Hap on this list. So really, Brett did come down a little bit from where he had him ranked. But it's, you know, I think I had him in the 60s or something. It wasn't that
well,
far
I
off.
I don't want to do too much behind the scenes stuff or really throw you under the bus here. But I'm looking at our original sheet, and we had him less than 10 spots apart on each other's first lists that came in.
Yeah, but how much of that was me just like not wanting to deal with it? Because
that may have been a lot of you not wanting to deal with it, but still.
All right, so for people, like we have Reynaldo Lopez at 51, just outside the top 50. I think he's really interesting as a fantasy name just because the dichotomy between what he is as a starter and the value he can provide there and what he is as a reliever, which is, you know, obviously depends if he ends up being a closer or not, but the risk involved seems substantial to me. So how do you – it seems like – This feels a little bit like a hedge to me, and I think a reasonable one. But if you're someone who's trying to understand his value, or if he's being offered to you in a trade, how exactly do you break down how do you value Reynaldo Lopez? I understand we have him between two names on a list, so you can say that. But if he's being offered to you in a trade for non-prospects or a major leaguer, Brett, what are you doing? How are you approaching Reynaldo Lopez at this point?
It's tough. I mean, he's the kind of guy you really have to hedge on, like you're saying. I mean, if he's I could certainly see him as an SP3 with a bunch of strikeouts if it comes around, and you know, and he ends up being sort of the, you know, the 80th percentile of what we think. And you know, even if he's not, I could see him being a top 10 closer. But you know, you can't rely on the reliever side having value, and you can't assume he's going to reach that starting pitcher ceiling. So, you know, there's sort of that middle, that wasteland middle that is a realistic outcome for Lopez, but a really bad one for fantasy.
Yep. That makes sense. Ben, Alex Verdugo seems like he's the hit tool first guy that you kind of tend to like, but he's, I don't know, 20 plus spots behind some of the other guys that we talked about. What is it about him that is different from those guys?
I don't think this is strange, but I agree that he's a safe bet to hit fairly well. I'm not sure if he's a safe bet to have an impact bat. Like, I do think that, like, Barreto and maybe even Williams potentially could hit 300 or better. I don't know if I see that from Verdugo. And the secondary fantasy tools are not as overwhelming for me. I don't think he's going to run that much. You know, maybe ideally he's a guy who gets to 20 homers, but that's not even a guarantee. So
no.
Eminently usable, like, OF 4 or 5, I think. But given the fact that he is probably another year away and that the ceiling isn't crazy, you know, I'm comfortable with where he is. He's almost in the top 50. So
yeah, no, it's certainly not, I don't think, a absurdly low ranking or anything like that. I think he's one of those guys that some years he's going to be like a, I don't know, like a top 25 outfielder, just on the strength of an insane hit tool year, because he rarely walks and he rarely strikes out, I should say. So there's going to be a lot of hits. When he hits well, but when he doesn't, it's going to be, you know, fourth or fifth outfielder type. So that certainly makes sense. And sticking with you, Ben, you know, Francisco Mejia is the object of my affection, I suppose. Can you talk me out of him as a prospect? I know we've gone back and forth on catching prospects. So
yeah, I was going to say the way to talk you out of him is he's a catching prospect.
Right.
Obviously opened plenty of eyes with the hit tool last year, which is why he goes from not ranked to 54. But you just never know with catching prospects if their glove is going to hold them back, at what point catching every day starts to have a negative impact on the offense. You know, we've seen that even with seemingly safe catching prospects recently, like, you know, Blake Swihart, or
that was the name I was about to ask you. Like, I was a little surprised, since we went so comp heavy on the ceiling and floors, if that was ever, you know, kind of even just in the back of your mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, guys like Swihart, and for a different reason, like Darnold, who just has never been able to stay healthy because of the demands of the position. And those were, as catching prospects go, you know, those guys were considered really safe. And you could play that game with almost any position, so I don't want to get too cute, but the risk is certainly more when you're a catcher, especially when you're one who is still a few seasons away, like Mejia is.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Brett, Leody, Taveras, and Juan Soto are back-to-back. Which one is the next Ronald Acuna, who is already the next Victor Robles?
I'd say Taveras. Taveras just has such a well-rounded skill set. You know, he's advanced for his age. And, you know, not that it should be an enormous factor, but, you know, the player development system that the Rangers have had has been pretty successful at bringing these types of players along, players that have these really high-end skill sets, and bringing the most out of them eventually at the major league level. You know, he's sort of looking down the barrel, being a true five category guy with really, I mean, you could dream on impact almost anywhere. I mean, I'd have a hard time putting anything more than sort of average on his power, but I mean, he's 18. There are a lot of ways for him to go from here, but his tools and his advancedness just lead him to be a really fun own in dynasty leagues.
And obviously there's one spot. I mean, it's only one spot, but is there a distinction without much of a difference between the two of them for you, or are they basically dead equals? Because they're both, you know, they're both relatively advanced for their age. They're both, you know, not full season ball guys, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, they're basically equals. I give the nod to Taveras because he's got a little bit more speed in the profile, and that makes the profile slightly safer. But that's really about it.
Yeah, Ben, is Nick Gordon just like a poor man's J.P. Crawford?
Yeah, that's not a bad way to think about it. I mean, he's boring as hell, but I think he'll hit, and I think he'll play shortstop. So, you know, I feel like his ceiling is a top 12 shortstop, and his floor is the 18th best shortstop. It's like really within that sort of narrow range.
Yeah, and I'll come back to you, Ben, in a minute, but I'm going to a guy who's probably going to be a beefy first baseman here, so I'm going to slide over to Brett.
Understood.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was not on the 101 to many a Canadian dismay. He is here. How much is the risk that he is not a third baseman baked into this? And are you really happy that you can now use Game of Thrones, or at least understand Game of Thrones references?
Yeah, I think this was actually, there were dueling Game of Thrones references.
Yeah, this
in
this. One was
some
me.
Of them were
yeah.
Ben's.
Oh, okay. I thought Brett would have gotten excited and used it on Vlad. Fair enough.
Yeah, but there's definitely the first base risk factored in here. But I mean, the bat could be so good that it doesn't really matter, at least not at this point. You know, as long as he still shows that sort of elite ceiling, he could be a first baseman and it wouldn't matter. He could still hit. He could still be a $30 player at first base.
Yep. And a name that we kind of talked about as late as yesterday that I really like, Ben, is Mitch Keller. And I mean, I certainly gave him plenty of helium. He's gotten a lot kind of over the end of the offseason and into the beginning of this season. What is it that people are getting with Mitch Keller? Who's, you know, he's been around. He was, I think, either a late first or like a supplemental first guy. So people know him, but he really came on as a starter last year.
Yeah. He's one of the guys I think I learned the most about, through conducting this list, because, you know, in my mind, when I started doing this, I think he was just sort of stuck in this glut of like, well, maybe arms, that because when you write 300 comments, you tend to have to like categorize people like that. And every time we showed someone the list and every time we discussed it, you know, I just kept hearing more and more good things about Keller. So he's really the start of this whole tier of four starting pitching prospects that could make like major, major jumps up the list next season. So we have Keller, Sandy Alcantara, Cal Quantrill, and Franklin Colome right in a row here. But we ended up putting Keller first, probably because he has been the most impressive at the highest level, because he was slightly more impressive than Alcantara was last season. And he's actually not like that far away anymore. I mean, he'll start in high A this season, which means maybe end of 2018, probably 2019. And he's in a great org for power arms. So when you add in everything, there's a lot to like.
Yeah, and there's always some weird things. I guess I'm checking this right now because I almost don't believe it. We have Mitch Keller at 20 years old, which is under. Yeah, he's 20, so he's actually younger than Alcantara behind him, who was kind of a pop-up guy last year and people probably assume is maybe younger with a little more ceiling. Cal Quantrill, he's younger than him, who was a first round pick last year. He's younger than Franklin Colome. I mean, it's one of those things where he definitely has a ceiling to go along with what was already an impressive season.
He does turn 21 on April 4th, so he just missed the cutoff. Sure. But I don't think of anybody as younger than Franklin Colome. So that's
right. Which it's just weird. You know, you're talking about a bunch of short season guys, and he and Alcantara spent the season in low A. But still, it's if I had guessed, I would have guessed he was at least 21, turning 22 this year. So a little younger than you might expect. Sticking with the Pirates, Brett, Kevin Newman is someone that's been pretty divisive. At least that I've seen on the non-fantasy prospect side. What is it that lands him on this? I mean, I think you could potentially argue we didn't list him with any impact categories. So what is it that lands him here?
It's the hit tool. I mean, you talk about Nick Gordon being boring. Newman's even more boring. Nick Gordon, but. You know, while I don't think he's going to be an impact batting average guy, I think the batting average and the approach is going to be enough for him to play every day. The other stuff just won't be there for him to be, you know, a big time contributor. But I think he'll be some level of fantasy starter for a while, which is what gets him on the list. In what's still, you know, even with improved depth, like Ben was saying, you know, the minors are still not quite up to the standard that we're used to seeing. So you know, it's a profile that is certainly not befitting his number.
Sure, and so.
Nice.
Yeah, certainly not that. So I've gone pretty slow with this. We've dissected a lot. So from 75 on, I think it starts getting a lot of really interesting and potentially high upside names for the most part. There is some kind of safety mixed in there. But, you know, Ben, if you could pick, let's say, three names from 75 through 101 that you either really like this year or you really like for next year, kind of who are your guys in this 75 to 101 range? Because I think there's a ton of upside here.
Yeah. Easiest one for me is Luis Alexander Basabe, who we have at 77, because, you know, my realistic ceiling for him was next year's Ronald Acuna, you know, a guy who, if he proves it again at a higher level, it could be a top 30 prospect. If we go down a little further, I like Matt Manning a lot. I think that my instinct is to stay away with guys with that profile because, you know, hard throwing righties with control issues are sort of a dime a dozen. But if it does click for him, he's someone who we could certainly value like we did, you know, Keller this year, if not even a little more than that. Mm-hmm. And who should I pick to round out the group? I'm really interested to see what Justin Dunn does in his first year, because I know there's definitely a good chance he's a reliever, but if he's not, he could still move pretty quickly and definitely be a mid-rotation asset. So those are the three I'll pick.
All right, and Brett, same question to you.
All right, so I'll take the guy who you could essentially copy and paste Basabe's answer for, but it's one spot later on the list, and that's Jamai Jones. Yeah. I think he's slightly less toolsy than Basabe, but I think he might be slightly safer. Mm-hmm. He's just a level or so behind him. Jones is sort of I could see him. While he might not have a ton of power, I think he could be a really strong all around contributor without being a zero in the power game. One guy who when we talk about sort of guys who we think are going to pop up, I really want to keep a close eye on Ryan McMahon for 2017. He's sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit. He may not end up playing third base if he stays in Colorado because they have Nolan Arenado. But, McMahon was still reasonably young for Double A and struggled. And, there's still some helium left in that bat. So if he has a solid turnaround season, I could see him being a top 30, 40 prospect pretty easily as he kind of gets on the verge of being in the majors. And then the other guy, because I don't want to disappoint everybody, Matt Theis, I think, gets underrated. Because first basemen of his ilk tend to be really boring, but Theis has a little bit more power than you think, and the approach and the batting average could be better than you associate with sort of a hit first baseman. He's a guy who, you talk about hit first basemen's guys who have ceilings of being a 300 hitter, probably realistically more about 280. I think Theis is, I think his realistic ceiling is higher than that. And I think he is the kind of guy who, if things break right, could actually make a run at a batting title or two. It won't make him a fantasy superstar, even if he does end up hitting 320 or so, just because I don't think he's a 25, 30 home run guy. But, I think he kind of gets lumped in there and deserves to be looked at a little bit higher.
Yeah, I look forward to you and JP Breen convening the 2024 Matt Theis Appreciation Society, much as you do for Adam Lind.
Brett didn't even wait. Brett didn't even wait for Dom Smith to graduate before finding for his next
movie. Dom Smith. I was going to say, seriously. Okay, so very last thing. I think you guys do an awesome job with the realistic ceilings and floors. It's something that I'm terrible with comps and I hate doing them, but you guys do a really good job. What were your favorite ones? Just, one or two each, whatever, just ones that you enjoyed writing. Ben, why don't we start with you?
I have Ahmed Rosario's realistic floor as Wilmer Flores to Tokyo Drift. I think that was my favorite one.
Yep. And Brett,
I don't know why I found this one funny, just because I don't know. But Juan Soto's ceiling was the full Nomar Mazara experience, and then his realistic floor was gets to meet Nomar Mazara at Rangers Fan Fest.
Yeah, I actually love that one. That was that was quite good. So all right, we're gonna take a break. Come back with shortstops, some of whom we managed not to discuss on this list. So.
Well, Craig, before we do that, there's like a pretty chunky honorable mention section in here, and I know that when we showed you this list yesterday, one person that you really argued to have on the back end over someone like Dylan Cousins was Enya. Welcome back to episode 82 of Tino. I hope you used that break to just take a look around your room, pick anything, and rank it against something else arbitrarily. So we are going to continue this episode of Tino by discussing a different ranking. And this time we're going to talk about Brett's Dynasty Shortstop League rankings list, part of the ongoing positional series we have at BP, in which we have articles and rankings for pretty much everything for just next season, three-year rankings, Dynasty League rankings, AL and NL-only rankings, You name it, we have a list for it. But shortstop is obviously one of the more fun collections of talent to write up. And Brett, we're going to give you a break from driving since you always have to drive during this portion, and I will do it instead. And obviously, we're not going to spend a ton of time on the prospects on this list since we just talked about a lot of shortstop prospects, but we probably will get to one or two. So, Craig, I am going to open this up with you. Brett's sort of top five could arguably be considered one tier. He has Correa at one, Machado at two, Seager at three, Bogarts at four, and Lindor at five. Two-part question for you. Is there anything in this region you strongly disagree with? And two, how many spots underranked is Xander Bogarts?
He's all of the spots underranked. I think I might be his second biggest fan to you. So I think we're of one mind on that front. I guess I don't think there's anything exactly egregious, but I guess my question would be what put Correa above Machado. He kind of grouped them in terms of how he wrote about them, but I kind of see Machado as much better right now and only a few years older, and not to the point where, you know, it's not like a couple years older where one's 31 and one's 28 or whatever. Machado's only 24 and he's come off back-to-back 35 plus homer seasons. Is it that he's going to not have shortstop eligibility, Brett?
Yeah, I mean he's unlikely to keep it, but it's, as we discussed, I mean that's not a huge factor in this. I mean I'm still really high on Correa.
Mm-hmm. And is it? I mean, last year was really good, obviously for Correa, but I don't know. Is 20 points of average for Machado more power? Doesn't have the, well, I guess they both have their own injury issues, but you know, Machado strikes out a little less. What is it that kind of gets Correa? I don't need to harp a ton, but what is it that gets Correa over that hump for you?
I think Correa can grow. I think he can grow into that same average and power that Machado has. And, you know, Machado just completely stopped running last year, which, it's really just a big question mark. If he had stolen, 10 to 15 bases last year, which would have even been a drop off from 2015, he would have been number one on this list. Well, but
OK, no, I think the speed is a really fair point and a decent equalizer. I guess the question is if Machado steals 8 bases, do you put him? I would wonder, like, where's your breaking point on that, given the difference in production?
My breaking point's probably about 10.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So getting down a tier, Brett, how difficult was it to rank Jonathan Villar, who you have at 6? Because I think that is perfectly justifiable, and you also probably could have had him at, like, 12, and I would have said that's perfectly justifiable. So was this a tough decision for you at all, or did you feel pretty comfortable putting him here?
Yeah, it was a pretty tough decision. I mean, the one thing that's good about it that makes it slightly easier is that Villar just has so much speed that, you know, even if he hits, 260, which he probably will given his contact rate, he gets on base enough to still be able to, steal 40 to 50 bases in the right spot. And if what we saw last year is real and he takes another step forward, which isn't impossible. I mean, he's only 25. So, he's in a friendly environment. He's still young. There's really not a ton of reason to drop him much below that, even though it's a little jarring to see his name above some of the names right after him.
When I was doing minor prep for this, his name was one that stuck out to me, and I actually think, you could make the argument that he has as good a chance as anyone to top this list in terms of value generated this year, and that I think you can make a decent case for getting him over Francisco Lindor even on a dynasty list. And I know that seems aggressive, but what we talked about with Jorge Mateo and the value of speed, I mean, let's also point out he hit 19 homers last year. You know, this is not a one-dimensional guy. Even if you drop the batting average down to 260, if he's a 15 homer, 50 stolen base guy, he's probably generating more value than Lindor and possibly Bogarts, right?
Yeah, I mean, probably more than Lindor. I mean, I'm still a big believer in Bogarts' power.
No, as am I, but
yeah, yeah, but yeah, no, it's a very valid point.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the guy that if you're picking someone to kind of jump out, like he easily outgenerated every shortstop last year, right? Wasn't he the top fantasy shortstop?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just on stolen base.
He was the top fantasy player, wasn't he?
Yeah. So I mean. That's something to keep in mind with him. And just to back up what Brett's saying about being, you know, this might seem aggressive, but there's plenty of upside there to justify it.
He was actually the number five.
Yeah, I was just about to correct myself, but yeah.
But yeah, it you know, the point still holds. I mean, it's not like he was that far off from Mookie Betts, so.
Yeah. So he's yeah. a fun one. He's one that I don't know. I mean, I know we talked about him. I remember I liked him as a speed guy. I definitely did not see close to 20 homer power from him, but I thought, you know, 10 to 12 and a bunch of speed. So it was really exciting to see him do that last year.
He will haunt me to the end of my days as a guy I sort of gave up on 1 year too soon.
Yeah.
Because I would like roster him in a lot of dynasty leagues as like sort of a bench guy to see if he could win a job with Houston or whatever. And I think I had him in my queue in TDGX for like the draft last year. Not necessarily like right before. I'm not saying I got swiped, but that would have been nice. That would have helped.
Yeah, I snagged him in a in my NL only that I do. I snagged him in like the fourth round last year. I was very happy.
So this next tier features guys we've either already talked about today or have talked about a lot in the past in Addison Russell, Dansby Swanson, and Brendan Rodgers. So we can make a nice, easy transition to a guy that we, you know, never talk about, Javier Baez, which is, you know, sort of the start of this really interesting tier with he, Trevor Story, and Tim Anderson. But Brett, I want to start with Baez. You know, what is it about his game that caused you to rank him behind a guy like Brendan Rodgers, who is still a few years away?
I think that there's enough concern now that the way Baez has sort of changed his approach that we're not going to see the kind of power that we thought we were going to see out of him in the majors. And, you know, the plate discipline is still an issue, though I do think he can improve that. I think the thing with Baez is that he's still exciting, but there's going to be sort of a glut in Chicago for at least a little while. And I think we may just be looking at a lower ceiling player than we thought we were when he was in the minors.
Yeah, I agree with that, Brett. I see him as kind of a guy that's like, he's going to be, it's not one of those better in real life than fantasy players, but definitely like more fun in real life than fantasy. Like he's going to do a lot of amazing and flashy things, but I don't know that that's going to translate necessarily to fantasy success. So I can certainly buy into this.
All right. So fair enough on Baez, and just two more guys I want to ask you about before we start to get to a little bit more of a lightning round feel. Also, for those of you listening, apologize for the shift in audio quality. My Wi-Fi router is not cooperating with me, so I had to hop on the phone instead. But Brett, I am interested to hear why Tim Anderson ranks this low. And your response might be he's not low and I'm just really high on him. But, he's someone who I think would definitely be in my top 10 as a guy who proved in a not huge sample size, but not insignificant, that he can hang with MLB pitching last year and who I still think has a pretty high upside.
Yeah, Ben, before you chime in, Brett, I'm with you, actually. I probably would have him in the top 10 as well. So I don't think it's just you.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm low on Anderson. I think I'm pretty bullish on him. You know, I think I'm just not entirely sold that what we saw means that he's going to be able to consistently hit major league pitching. I mean, I think we're a lot closer to knowing that, but you know, I don't think putting him behind, you know, guys like Baez and Story are really shunning him all that much. I still believe in him as a, you know, a guy who might not get on base a ton, but can hit, you know, 280 plus and steal, 30 or so bases and have a, a bit of power to go with it.
Yeah, and just as much as I love Anderson, I will say, he has a worse strikeout to walk ratio than Baez did, and hit for about the same ISO. So I think there's reason to have hesitancy as well. So I think that's a fair point.
So Craig, the last guy I want to have a mini discussion about is someone we've talked about before, so I don't want to dwell too much, but we talked about Villar having sort of this explosive performance last year, while a guy who was barely behind him in terms of performance was Gene Segura, who is down at 16 here, behind, guys like J.P. Crawford, who we talked about not being that exciting, behind Troy Tulowitzki, who I think is very clearly, entering his decline phase. Is this about right for Segura with you, or do you think we're getting a little too harsh in anticipating some regression?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the case that just his immediacy allows him to be over a guy like Crawford, but that's really one spot. I think the rest of the guys have more upside and longer kind of career horizons that make this a reasonable ranking. I think it's about right. And if you wanted to take him over Crawford, that's reasonable. I just think, last year kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. He still has the speed that he flashed when he was kind of one of the prospects that would have ranked towards the top of this list a few years ago, stealing 33 bases. But the big surprise for him was all of a sudden he was slugging close to 500. He slugged 499. He hit 20 home runs, which was well beyond what he had done previously. There was a swing change, kind of mechanics change to a swing to drive that a little bit, as there was for a bunch of Diamondbacks. But he's in Seattle now. It's not as good a spot for right-handed power. So I think we're going to see a decent amount of that evaporate. And I just don't know that we see, the 353 BABIP again, even if it's down to – he has a career average of 314. But, even if it's down there, you're still seeing a relatively notable drop-off in average production, and I think we're going to lose some power as well. So I think there's some reasonable hesitancy or trepidation with Segura going to Seattle in this case, and just that, the guys ahead of him either have a little more impact talent. I mean, again, I said Crawford. I think you could take him over to Tulowitzki if you're worried about his health too. But we've seen the downside with Segura before as well, and that's that he's mostly only a speed option. 20 or 25 stolen bases with not much average or power to speak of. So
Brett, how's this for an initial false precision round question? Talk about Ketel Marte, the guy who replaced Segura, because I think he was someone that all three of us, sort of liked as a late round sleeper last year, and definitely had some mixed results in 2016. So I actually really like where you have him ranked, but talk a little bit about what you're expecting from him moving forward.
Yeah, I think the thing with Marte is that he's got speed, but he doesn't have sort of game changing speed. But I think he has the ability to hit for much more batting average than he showed in 2016. I think in Arizona he can kind of hit the ball in the gaps and have a little bit of a better time. He had a rough go at it in 2016. He had this strikeout to walk rate was a big step back from 2015, but I think he could be a 280 290 hitter in time, pretty consistently, and he'll never quite have the power, but that combined with 20 to 25 steals at that position, I think is a really nice potential outcome for someone his age.
Craig, what the hell do we do with Eduardo Nunez?
Ignore him. Are we not in the false precision round? I don't think he's.
No,
I don't think
he's
totally
that good.
I'm
totally fine with that answer.
Yeah. Okay.
Brett, so you have Kevin Maitán at 30. He's not someone we touched on when we talked about shortstop prospects on the 101 earlier, but he was on our 101. Something I struggled with when we were trying to rank him is just dealing with like the insane lead time that comes with a player of his caliber. So how did you weigh that against guys who aren't elite contributors but are contributors right now? Because, you have them right ahead of Brandon Crawford and Didi Gregorius and Jed Jerko. And while that may seem crazy aggressive, I don't really think it is. But just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think even with shortstop being not having a ton of major league depth, I think you can kind of either luck yourself into someone of Crawford or Gregorius's ability, or you can trade a lesser prospect for someone who you can fill in. You know, Maiton just has the upside is, I think people get a little carried away with the upside. I don't think he's anywhere near a lock to be Miguel Cabrera, which seems to be the consensus in some parts, but you know, he is a potential huge bat, and you know, you're gonna have to stick him on your farm for four to five years, but you know, the payoff at that point where he's ranked is worth the difference between what you get in this sort of, you know, 15th best shortstop range, the difference between that and what you can find on the waiver wire.
Fair enough. Craig, what is the year when you and I will finally give up on Chris Owings?
I will never. I knew where you were going. It's never going to happen. I still think. I honestly believe that the Diamondbacks' best lineup, at least to open the year, is with Owings and Marte at shortstop and second. I don't care which one plays which. Owings is not that bad.
No, he was good last year.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I still buy in. I still buy in. I'm in on it. 21 stolen bases last year. It's a useful guy.
He was a top 20 shortstop.
There you go.
Actually ranked ahead of Baez and Russell in ESPN's Player Rater.
That's incredible. I love that.
Yep. Brett, you sort of wisely poured some cold water on the Orlando Arcia crowd last year. How good does it feel to get to rank him justifiably at 37 here?
I still get comments that he's too low on this list. I just don't get the fantasy appeal, really. You know, I think the batting average was overstated when he was hitting well, and you know, even though it might be slightly understated now that he has been worse. You know, I just don't see him being much more than sort of a poor man's Alcides Escobar.
Can I ask you, Brett?
That's sexy.
Yeah, that is harsh. But can I ask you, is he the downside to J.P. Crawford like we talked about before?
No, I think Crawford has more loud contact ability than Arcia. So I think it's slightly lower than his floor, but I mean, I see what you're getting at, and it's a fair enough question to ask, even though I think Crawford has a little bit more juice in the bat.
Fair enough.
All right. So to wrap up, Craig, pick one person in the 41 to 50 range who you find interesting.
I got two names that jump right out at me, but I'll take the one who's a little lower down. Miguel Angel Sierra. I put him on the ones who could jump for the futures guide. He really hit for power in short season ball, and we'll see if he kind of gets exploited, which he did get exploited in a different short season league, at the New York Penn League. Struck out a lot more and wasn't able to hit for as much power. But I'd like to see how and if he adjusts to that, because he's a shortstop who does have some pop in the bat. And I think he's someone who could kind of shoot up these lists and isn't talked about as much. I mean, it's definitely a gamble since he is, you know, he's still so young and has yet to approach full season ball, really. But that's a guy I'm keeping track of as we enter the season.
Brett, same question to you.
Well, this will be a good excuse for me to talk about Darian Cruz. You know, Cruz is a recent J2 signing from a couple of years ago from Atlanta. Just a really, really good athlete, lots of speed potential. And, you know, I think he could be someone who breaks out in a pretty fun way this year. You know, he kind of showed himself pretty well in Danville last year, as in he was playing there. He was playing there as a 17-year-old and you know, didn't put up numbers, but he stood in there. I think he'll end up back in rookie ball probably this year. But you know, he could see some helium in the summer as someone who has a much better time in his second go around outside of the complex leagues.
Yep, he was the other name for me.
How impressed are you guys that I didn't ask about Jose Peraza?
I'm proud of you. I honestly thought when we started talking about now I'm forgetting. But I thought you were going there. I thought you were going in that direction at one point.
Oh, I mean, he's too well, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Now he has a starting job too. Brett, was this list done before the Phillips trade?
This list was done 2 weeks ago, so probably not.
Yeah, so probably would rank higher now with a starting job.
Yeah, I think he'd be maybe a slot or two higher. Yeah, not as high as Enya though.
Welcome back to episode 82 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Please check out BP right now to see the top 101 Dynasty prospect list live, as well as the top 101 IRL prospect list that Craig helps to lead. And check out the tail end of our weekly fantasy positional series, which only 2 weeks left, talking about starting pitchers and relievers. So get it while it's hot. Please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever site you use to listen to this podcast. It's been quite a while since you've had any reviews one way or another, which is arguably fair when you take 3 months off like we did. But we've been good, we've behaved, and we've been back on a regular schedule again. So please do give us reviews if you enjoy the show. As always, you can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast. You can get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. And we are planning on having a reader email show fairly soon, so get those emails in. You can find Brett on Twitter. That is true. Send us a link to your review. We'll probably answer your question. How's that for a commitment? You can find Brett on Twitter at DynastyGuru. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
currently drinking.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bickle. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
Zenya's realistic ceiling.
Oh, she hit it.
I was going to say, this is it.
She's there, man. That is. She's definitely there.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.